Start. And first of all, I'm going to introduce myself. I'm Janet Peters, and I'm a project coordinator with the Great Lakes ADA Center. I want to welcome you on behalf of the Great Lakes ADA Center and the Pacific ADA Center as we are hosting the Accessible Technology Webinar Series. We are hosting it on behalf of the network, the National Network of ADA Centers, and the National Network of ADA Centers provide comprehensive services for information, consultation, referral, resources, and training on the Americans with Disabilities Act. And we work with businesses, employers, government entities, service providers, and individuals. And you can find more about us on our website that's on the slide or at www.adata.org. Today's session is on the power of social networking for people with disabilities. We're very pleased to have speaker Mike Pacello with us. Michael is the founder and the president of the Passiello Group, which does software accessibility consulting. He has been in the field quite a number of years. For more than 25 years, Mr. Passiello has served as an international leader, technologist lecturer in the areas of emerging technology, usability, technical and legal standards, and accessibility. In 2006, Mike, along with his colleague Jim Tobias, was appointed co-chair to the United States Federal Access Board's Telecommunication and Electronic and Information Technology Advisory Committee. Mike was also invited by the UN, the United Nations ambassador, to speak on the theme of identifying core areas of opportunity to foster greater ICT accessibility for the UN Global Initiative for Inclusion, Information, and Communication Technologies event. Mike has received numerous awards and other recognition for his accessibility work and authored the book Web Accessibility for People with Disabilities. We are very, very pleased to have him with us today. Just a couple of technical details. We are using a new conferencing system this time. The session will be recorded and archived, and if you have registered, you will receive an email with the link to that archive. We also value your feedback on the session, and so there is a link to the evaluation form at the end of this session, as well as you'll receive it with the archive link. And with that, I'm going to turn it over to our speaker, Mike, and thank you, Mike, for joining us today, and I think we're in for a great session. Just one more thing, sorry. We will take questions at the end, so please try to hold your questions until the end. We'll leave plenty of time for Mike to answer our questions on this important topic. Thank you, Mike, and here you go.
Great. Thank you very much, Janet, and thanks, everyone, for coming today. Janet, if I could have you bring up the title slide first. As everyone knows, today the theme of our session is the power of social networking for people with disabilities. Just a quick note on that, there had been a title out there that was talking about the power of social networking sites. And really, social networking isn't about sites so much as it is about applications and really interaction, particularly communication as an IT or information technology. And as you can see on this title slide, really what I find most intriguing and most empowering, if you will, from the standpoint of people with disabilities, is that social networking gives us power that I think beyond anything that we've ever been able to realize before. The ability to build relationships across a number of different scenarios and boundaries, the ability to increase awareness around a topic that's very near and dear to our hearts across, again, many horizons where it relates to different types of disabilities and caretakers, professionals who are in the area of technology and disability, and perhaps most emphatically that I've been able to witness over the last several months in particular is the increase in voice, that is the ability for individuals with disabilities and those associated with them are able to talk and speak out to the world in a very globalized and universal way. So without further ado, why don't we begin with our first slide, the agenda slide, Janet. Next slide. So I'm going to cover six areas, so five really, and then we'll have a conclusion. I'm going to give you a little bit of perspective of the disability landscape, what the world is like out there. Much of what I'll be talking about today is primarily from the perspective of information technology, not so much the ADA kind of notion of things, but rather information and communication technology and where it stands for people with disabilities. Then I'll talk about the accessibility gap, probably something that most of us are familiar with, the lack of accessibility or the inherent need to close the gap of accessibility in the information and communication world. The third area will be the emergence of social networking. Talk about the different types of social networking that are out there, some of the popular tools that are being used. As you can see in the fourth part, we'll talk about blogging, we'll talk about YouTube, and we'll talk about microblogging and a couple of other areas that that I think you'll find interesting. And that includes that last point there, storytelling. Storytelling is a personal soapbox of mine, and I'll talk just a little bit about that and how useful it's been to me and to some of my colleagues in the area of closing that gap between people with disabilities, and particularly software designers and developers. And then we'll have a conclusion. So let's move on to slide number one and talk a little bit about the disability landscape. So on the current slide is basically a map of the world. And the map of the world helps us to appreciate that really everywhere we go, disability is global. It's universal. Everyone in the world is impacted or affected in one way or another by disability. And what we want to try and do, and what the thrust of today's discussion is, to leverage accessibility in the same way that disability is universal. You look around the world today, certainly in North America, we've had a number of different wins, if you will, where disability awareness is concerned, increase in disability mandates like the ADA, Section 255 of the Telecommunications Act, Section 504 and Section 508 of the Rehab Act, and a lot of other various mandates that have come out in Canada. They have the Common Look and Feel Law. Recently, there's been the Ontarian Accessibility Law that has been updated. A lot of these tend to be technology-driven laws, but again, the purpose towards increasing and increasing accessibility within the technology realm. You go over to Europe, there's an awful lot that's been going on, particularly over the last 5 to 10 years as it relates to the rights of individuals with disabilities, technology and people with disabilities. Very soon you'll see some new legislation that's being promoted by the European community, very similar to our Section 508 here in the United States, which is essentially a procurement mandate to ensure that technology that is purchased by federal agencies is accessible and usable to people with disabilities. Areas like Japan have policy. They have the Japanese Industry Standards Organization themselves have been highly effective in promoting and increasing accessibility technology. Australia has also been a leader in this area. So really, as you look at the map here, whether you're Europe or really regardless what continent you're on, the disability landscape, as I mentioned here, is an emerging market, and it is one that is quite pervasive and ubiquitous. So hang on to those terms because we're going to use them again in other areas. Let's move on to slide four, please. So again, if you kind of step back and look a little bit at the history of accessibility as a whole, there are, from my perspective at least, basically three waves of accessibility. We have the first wave, the what I call the assistive technology, the assistive wave, where We had an awful lot of assistive and adaptive technologies, things as simple as wheelchairs, hearing aids. You know, some people look at crutches as being a kind of an assistive and an adaptive aid to an individual with disability. These really were more mechanical in nature, kind of fell along or flowed along with the industrial age that many of them grew out of. Over the last 20 to 30 years, I might be stretching it a little bit by 30 years, but it seems to me in the mid-70s, that kind of qualifies as a good time banner. We've seen kind of a move towards what is commonly being known as the second wave, or accessibility has become a more pervasive term or term that is being used to describe the kind of technologies used to enhance the lives of individuals with disabilities. And that kind of goes along with the IT or the computer age. So technologies before that were more manual and industrial in nature, say for example a magnifying glass or magnified screen that kind of overlaid your screen, has been turned into software. So we have things called screen magnifiers that are used by individuals with low vision. Individuals who are blind and for years relied on technologies like Braille or Braille devices to read back things, printed material, for example, even to interpret things on a computer screen. Many of those devices that were hardware-focused and hardware-oriented have been replaced by technologies that tend to be information technologies more along the line of software that's installed on your computer. But the third wave that we're entering into now is something that I think will be very different. And I know many of my colleagues and certainly individuals who are much more progressive and leaders in the area of technology with people with disabilities are seeing this third wave of pervasive accessibility, ubiquitous accessibility, particularly as we enter into this new age of information and communication technology, becomes something more along the lines of utility, much like our phones and electricity, things we can't live without with. So I'm sure most of you out there have technologies like PDAs or smartphones and cell phones and laptops or netbooks. You know, all of these technologies interact with a number of other technologies, telecommunication technologies and infrastructures all over the world, web technologies, internet technologies. It's gotten to the point now where we have a crossover of hardware and software, and our ability to be able to interact and communicate with one another as humans and as people are literally becoming reliant on these technologies. They have become that pervasive and that ubiquitous in nature. And this is where accessibility is moving towards, a notion of pervasive accessibility where everything and anything, anywhere, on any type of device or tool that we use will have what I call inherent or built-in accessibility. And that's really what we want. So we'll go on to the next slide. So why are we moving in that direction? Well, again, if you just kind of look at the history, even in this country, you start to see the same movement from the industrial age to the technology age to this notion of third wave accessibility. We moved away from ADA, have reached many high levels there. Still some things need to be tweaked. I'm certain that most of you, like me, would like to see the day when the kind of technology enhancements and standards and mandates that are available in things like Section 508 are right there in ADA, so it becomes more of a human right the way it was intended to be across all horizons as opposed to limited to just kind of architectural enhancements. But again, we're moving along here. We moved into Section 508. We moved into the Telecommunications Act. Today we talk about standards in the context of the Section 5 Weight Refresh, or TICAC. That committee combined essentially two major standards in the U.S. federal law, Section 255 and Section 508, and harmonized those standards with many of the industry standards that are very popular today, promulgated by organizations like the International Standards Organization, the American National Standards Institute, and the Human Factors Ergonomics Society, as well as the World Wide Web Consortium and its Web Accessibility Initiative. This is a huge leap forward. This will ultimately provide those of us with disabilities and those of us who are working in the disability field an opportunity to really see a harmonization of these standards, not just here again in the U.S., but as you see there in the signage on the right for those that are able, all over the world, whether it's in the Europe, Canada, whatever continent, and whatever technology. All of those platforms are seeing significant advances in the standards and mandates. But as the bottom of this screen talks about, there are a lot of great standards out there. There are many new standards that are being enhanced in some awesome and very cool technologies. But the fact of the matter is that people with disabilities are still kind of in the state that you'll see on the next slide. So go ahead, Janet. Next slide. Yeah, so this tends to be one of my more favorite slides. Again, for those that are not able to see, there's a slide here with a gentleman kind of balding, not unlike myself, scratching his head. And the title and the theme of this particular slide is Accessibility, Organized Chaos. So we've talked about so many laws and so many standards, so many different technologies. And social networking is coming at us at a faster speed, faster than if it may be hard to express, but even internet speed, if you will. With so many different things that are coming at us, it gets very confusing very easily out there. And by the way, not just for people with disabilities. It's individuals who work with people with disabilities, corporations and industry who are trying their best to promote and to enhance the technologies that they build to keep up, if you will, with the demands of the disability community with very limited resources, both from the standpoint of monetary resources as well as human resources. We look at governments and standards organizations. They too are trying to keep up with technology and keep up with accessibility. And frankly, it tends to be very chaotic in nature and not as well organized as I think many of us would like it to see. It's not to poo-poo, so to speak, the many efforts of many of the organizations all over the world. They've been really some yeoman-type work that's been accomplished by a number of admirable organizations and people. But the fact of the matter is we are not well organized. And now we're entering into this whole new age, this third wave of accessibility. And so it's important that we get together, standardize, harmonize the standards, and really provide a basis for increasing accessibility, particularly as we go into these social networks. Next slide. So, again, not unlike a good friend of mine and well-known researcher in the area of people with disabilities, Marcia Shearer, she had this wonderful title to her book, Living in the State of Stuck. And I often think that we find ourselves in exactly this state. Again, regardless of whether you're a person with a disability, a caretaker, or a professional in the industry, despite all of the significant leaps in technology, despite all of the accessibility standards, there still is this gap that often seems like is growing between mainstream technology or as we call it today, information and communication technology, and accessibility technology, whether it's adaptive, assistive, or accessible technology. There's still this gap, and this gap seems to be growing faster than technologists and people with disabilities are able to keep up with. And I illustrate that on our next slide. So we have this growing notion, if you will, of an accessibility gap. And by that I mean a couple of things. First of all, the disability demographics combined with the aging population or third age adults are really creating a demand for IAT or inherently accessible technology. And that makes sense. I mean, as the baby boomer generation grows, more and more people are losing their ability in some of the common sensory areas that we know of. They're losing sight, they're losing hearing, they're losing mobility. So when you combine the population of older adults and the aging population with the growing population of individuals with disabilities, we see that there is a much greater emergent and urgent need for technology to be more usable and more accessible to them. Unfortunately, the technological advances that are being made in the field of accessibility lag behind mainstream information and communication technology. And this is really what ultimately has created this gap. Corporations and companies, regardless of who they are or how big or how small they are seeing technology, mainstream technology, being developed and released on a daily basis, new tools, new applets, new services, and trying to create an environment or build an architecture that will also accommodate users with disabilities requires a lot of work and a lot of investment, and we're not seeing that made in the great leaps and bounds that it is that mainstream technology is obviously getting. So this gap is widening, and it's leaving these third age adults and people with disabilities further behind. So how can we close the gap? So we'll go on to the next slide. Well, I think we can close the gap by forcing what Nassim Taleb calls a black swan. Now, if you know anything about black swans, they're basically identified by three key attributes. They're rare. That is, they're unexpected. You generally can't predict them. And they appear almost improbable. Interestingly enough, though, their impact is huge and quite pervasive in nature. A classic black swan, if you will, is the emergence of the World Wide Web. No one could have predicted back in the early 90s when Tim Berners-Lee introduced the world and the notion of the World Wide Web to the rest of the world that it would fundamentally become the pervasive and impactful, practically a staple, if you will, of human society today. Largely unpredicted, largely unexpected. I don't know about the probability of it because certainly technology had been working in the notion of the internet space for a good 20 years or more before that, but certainly the effect that it's had on society today is unparalleled. And the other interesting thing about a black swan is exactly what we're doing right now, is that retrospectively we could have, figuratively speaking, have predicted it. We look back, we see all the signs that were there to make something the marvel of technology as it was or as it is, the World Wide Web, we're already in place. We're already working with markup languages, which is the fundamental language used to create web pages today, long before Berners-Lee created the HTML language that was the foundation language, programming language for the web today. We already had the internet at that time. There were all kinds of internet activity that was being used, but no one at that particular time saw something like the World Wide Web coming. Looking back, now it makes sense. Accessibility is no different. We've had, quote-unquote, our black swans. I mean, think about the invention of the telephone. Could anyone have predicted how pervasive it would be or it was for individuals with disabilities as it was a technology that was created for individuals with hearing disabilities? And it's had a profound effect on society. Even though we've moved away from the landline notion, we're using wireless technology, again, it's still fundamentally a device that we use to talk to one or to many people at the same time. Curb cuts, again, another type of aid, if you will, that is quite pervasive. You could barely walk around anywhere in the world today and not see the notion of curb cuts. But when they were originally introduced as an accessibility aid or an adaptive aid, if you will, I don't think anybody would have thought, well, these are only going to be for wheelchair people. Now everyone uses curb cuts, and frankly, those that don't usually fall off the curb. So that's quite interesting. I believe, and I really feel strongly that social networking has the capacity and the capability to be a black swan. Now, even though black swans are not predictable, I am, if you will, going on record. I really believe that it will be as impactful or perhaps more impactful than the notions of curb cuts and telephones in society for people with disabilities. Let's go on to the next slide. Why do I think that it will be this impactful? Well, just think about what's the classic disconnect between users, people with disabilities, and developers and designers of these new and mainstream technologies, right? People with disabilities are looking for the World Wide Web or Web 2.0 and relying on its persuasive power to reach and to get to these developers and designers, to form relationships, to create, if you will, a voice. That's what they need. Developers, what do they need? Well, they need the obvious. They need to become more accessibility aware. They need to understand users or understand user experience. And social networking has the capability and the capacity for closing that gap, for helping those two entities, the users and themselves, and the developers and designers, to develop a bond, to develop a relationship, because that is the fundamental precept of social networking, engagement, interaction between users and developers. Next slide. So, social networking, what's the deal? It's pretty obvious. Social networking, from the perspective of anyone, but particularly from the perspective of individuals with disabilities, allows us three important attributes. It gives us three important attributes. It increases our voice. We're able to stand up, so to speak, and yell out, get on a soapbox, tell organizations, tell industry, affect the future by raising our voice. And it doesn't matter if you're John Doe in a little small town in Oklahoma, or if you're a large corporation, a Microsoft or a Google, social networking provides the capacity for increasing and giving and raising voice. Second, social networking is the new means of communicating need. So again, from the perspective of individuals with disabilities or individuals who work in the disability community, from whatever environment they're in, we can communicate needs. And again, if you are active today, and I see several people who are participating today, if you are already active in some area of social networking, you see how effective we can be by communicating the kinds of needs with new applications or the specialized needs of individuals with disabilities. And I think perhaps one of the greater aspects or greater attributes of social networking is this awareness building. I can't think of one disability community that hasn't been able to establish some sort of voice or some sort of social networking organization or site or what have you to build more awareness. I know individuals in the blind deaf community. I know individuals in the quadriplegic area. Individuals who have speaking disabilities, speech disabilities, blind, hard of hearing, deaf, mobility. It doesn't matter. Everyone has an opportunity to communicate, to increase their voice, and more importantly, to build awareness around their needs. That's the effect and that's the power of social networking. Next slide, please. And so this is where the emergence of social networking comes to play. Now, on the slide in front of you, there to the right side are a number of different social networking applications that are very prominent, very popular world. I'll talk about many of them in just a moment individually. But things like Facebook and YouTube, Twitter is really very hot right now. If you're not tweeting, then you're just not in, I guess. WordPress is a blogging notion. Other social networking applications like LinkedIn and Second Life are also popular. But social networking is about what I said before. It's about relationships. It's about collaboration. It's about education. It's about business, news, community, even storytelling. It's about people engaging with other people. And perhaps more importantly, again, it's ubiquitous, it's universal, it's global. I can talk here today, make a statement, and I can guarantee you at 2, 3, or 4 o'clock in the morning, somewhere out in the world, there'll be other individuals who'll be responding. So time is barrierless at this particular point. And you'd be amazed at the kind of communication, collaboration, educational efforts that can be built as a result of social networking. And social networking comes in different flavors. Kind of the big, medium, small flavors. So from a big standpoint, there's the concept of blogging. Blogging was very popular a few years ago. Everyone had to have their blog, and you had companies like WordPress and Blogger out there. People were able to write fairly lengthy opinions. Or write stories, or report news, or build education, and do a number of different things in that way. Then came the notion of microblogs. Facebook was perhaps the first and most popular microblog. So it took, if you will, blogging, that is, writing, almost journalistic-like writing, down to the more finer art of creating smaller snippets of of opinions, of thoughts, of facts. But Facebook added something new to the game of social networking. It created the notion of applets and applications, so that now you just post data. Now you could play games. Now you could create applications that were useful tools, productivity tools within the business, and businesses found them opportunistic to create things that fundamentally allowed them to reach you, to reach the user. And Twitter's kind of followed along that same path, except Twitter is a very abbreviated and perhaps a more realistic notion of what micro means in the context of things that people say and things that people do. So you've got these very short snippets, 140 characters, where you can make statements, post facts, and do a number of different things. And then we have video blogging, if you will, or video social networking, things, applications like YouTube and TEDblog are being used today to allow you to see and view through video, even accessible video notions, and share, build awareness, build community, and collaboration. Next slide. So on the current slide, you'll see an example of a blog page. This particular blog is called Access Garage. So a perfect blog page, if you will, created by Aaron Leventhal, a good friend of people with disabilities, long worked with a number of different companies, IBM, AOL. Aaron was earlier involved in the development of screen reader software early on in his developer life, and so he created this blog page that people follow what he's writing, and these blog pages can be used to write journals, and journals could come in again different forms. It could be a personal journal, kind of a day-to-day thing. I've seen journals by individuals with disability who are involved in various activities. For example, there was a movement where a particular group of individuals were traveling all over the U.S. raising awareness and raising some funds for a particular effort, and they used the blog page as a way of journaling all of their activities day to day, where they stopped, posting pictures and things along that line. So you get the notion of journaling. You get an opportunity to post opinions. That seems to be a very, very popular means today, or reviews, if you will, of technologies. I know at TPG we have our own blog. Oftentimes we will use our blog to post reviews of upcoming technology, particularly some of the emerging technologies that are out there, and we'll give you some insight, not just an opinion, but some facts and some data about, is this thing usable? Is it accessible? What needs to be done to enhance it for accessibility? But other people are using blogs to, again, express their opinions, to write some thoughts on a particular activity. And, of course, blogs are very popular for reporting news of any nature, regardless of, again, whether it's accessibility or disability-oriented. But a lot of educational institutions that have blogs use them as a means for posting, much like this particular session was posted on an area where people could get some access to finding out what kind of seminars, webinars, and educational activities. We used a form of blogging when we were doing the Section 508 refresh work. We used another form of a type of blogging or social networking application called a wiki. Wikipedia, for example, you'll note that was built using this social networking application. And again, it gives us an opportunity to do an awful lot of different things. Next slide. YouTube. YouTube again is perhaps one of the most pervasive and ubiquitous notions of social networking out there. It's used for training. It's used for awareness building. You see how this particular YouTube page features the accessibility features on the iPhone, and it's literally a step-by-step walkthrough of the features on an iPhone and the accessibility features on an iPhone. So it has wonderful reach as far as individuals with disabilities. And perhaps one of the big things that's taken place just recently is the introduction of captioning. So individuals themselves, persons, never mind organizations, people can go out, install or load or upload their videos into YouTube, and they can actually do captioning right there for individuals to the advantage of individuals who are deaf or hard of hearing. And this is something very valuable. Interestingly enough, even some of the media companies, of course WGBH and the National Center for Accessible Media have been doing this for years on DVDs and movies and videos and things like that. But note recently that the social media site Hulu recently introduced the notion of captioning. So again, you see the technology is spreading, the social networking environment is spreading, and so accessibility is starting to take root into these activities. Let's move on to the next slide. I talked about microblogging. We'll talk about it in two forms today, the most common form. Facebook, on this particular screen, I've taken a screen capture. Hopefully he's not on here. I did get Andy Imperato's permission to use his likeness on my slide, but Andy Imperato is the director of the American Association of Persons with Disabilities, and Andy keeps us up to date on the activities. Many activities of people with disabilities, particularly all over the United States, and the AAPD has been in the forefront of Facebook and social networking and Twittering at that level. But the interesting thing about Facebook is it's a little bit of blog, meaning that you can communicate, interact, you can form relationships with people, but you tend to do that in smaller snippets of content and information and interaction, but slightly larger than Twitter, which is limited to this 140 character limitation of what you say and how you say it, or what you do and how you do it. So I have here, it's a little bit of blog and a dash of microblog, but its focus is on community. Its focus is on collaboration, working together. There are incredible amount of activities in organizations, new organizations that have been formed through Facebook, and the efforts, growing efforts of organizations supporting people with disabilities have been enhanced greatly as a result of establishing a presence in Facebook. And of course, it develops relationships. Just a little side anecdote here. My mother somehow found out that I had a Facebook presence. I can't even remember how she did it. She probably jumped into Google, searched on my name, found it. And one day I started getting these messages through Facebook from her. And it took me a while to figure out that she thought Facebook was email. And so that's how she was communicating with me. So I taught her that no, Facebook is much more about collaboration and community. And of course, today she's all over the place in Facebook. So for my mom, she's in her late 60s. I think it's pretty cool to watch someone of the older generation involved at that level. Again, one of the other great assets of Facebook are the built-in applets and the applications that people can use. And again, bringing people together with disabilities, these applets are really useful. Next slide. Twitter is perhaps the most popular form of microblogging today. It is primarily the form of microblogging that I use. My Twitter page, the Passiello Group Twitter page, is up on this particular slide. I like it because Twitter gives me the opportunity to post newsletters, if you will, very, very small snippets of very important information. And more often than not, it's information that is resource-based information. Others are posting it, others are developing it, and it gives me an opportunity to build some awareness about the kind of activities around the world. So I use it along with some other tools to make sure that I get and reach out to across the board, across all of the blogging and microblogging and social networking applications. Again, I love it because it's a great place to provide links, immediate links to resources. It is a great way of building community and collaboration to develop relationships with one another. Again, anecdotally speaking, we're a group of us that just spawned the idea of creating what we're calling an unconference, which basically means it's a disorganized form of a real conference here in the Boston area where I'm from, to get together a bunch of developers and designers and talk shop, so to speak, and talk about the kind of things that we can do, particularly in the area of social networking and enhancing and increasing its accessibility. But that was done very simply by one person saying, hey, why don't we just get together for an accessibility unconference in Boston? And there we are. And about literally in minutes, people were saying, okay, yeah, I want to. And we've got folks from Canada, from I'm talking geographical relationship to Boston, people from Canada, people from New York, people from Pennsylvania, people down in D.C., all ready to come up and participate in this in-person conference. We do things like tweet-ups, and tweet-ups are events that we hold within larger events. We have one at the annual Cal State University Northridge or the CSUN Conference. We'll have our second annual one this year in March, and they're great opportunities for us not only to meet there in person, but we webcast these tweet-ups. We capture them as well live so that, again, we can reach thousands of people all over the world and engage them in this relationship building, idea building, and it's really just something like you've never seen and never experienced before. Next slide. And this next slide that will come up in just a minute is a great example, a story of the power of community and relationship building that social networking does for us today. And this is a real experience, which is why I have the thread literally built into the slide. So on the slide are just three small Twitter, or tweets, if you will, statements in a conversation that I had with a couple of people on Twitter. And this goes back to last summer. But I'm going to literally read it to you because it gives you an idea of the power of communication. So we had an individual by the name of Daryl, who was talking to me and saying, hey, it's pretty ironic when Yahoo still has visual-only captchas that continue to lock us out. And I responded right back and I said, hey, you know what? A tweet by Daryl is interesting. It made me think about the power of social media and how to give users voice. Tell your accessibility story. In other words, Daryl said, hey, look, I'm having this problem with this thing called CAPTCHA, which is kind of encrypted passwords that people who are blind or have low vision cannot use or cannot see. And I said, these are the kind of ways of raising awareness around it. Yahoo probably doesn't know about it. So then another a good friend of mine, David Clark, responded back. And sure enough, David is a person with CP. He himself has difficulty speaking, and so note what he says in his next tweet back. He said, hey, this is so true. I've been able to communicate with people via tweets, which are small Twitter statements, who have real trouble understanding me. So here was an effective means for one individual with a disability to communicate with a broad community of people, regardless of whether they're individuals with disabilities. I couldn't think of a more powerful way or a more powerful statement to be made by any other individual, and it shows the kind of power that social networking can bring to us today. Next slide. Another form or popular application, a social networking application, is something called LinkedIn, LinkedIn, Plaxo. These are kind of, they're being used by individuals and organizations to build relationships, but I find that they tend to focus primarily on business relationships or job hunting. People often use LinkedIn and Plaxo as a way of engaging one another, engaging employees, doing job interviews. I know people will give reviews or performance reviews, if you will, or recommendations of individuals that they work with. But it's primarily a collaboration and a contact database. Other people are using it in different ways, but this is where I see its primary use today. Next slide. I know that folks are running out of time here. We're getting down to the last few minutes, so I'm going to try and push through without missing a couple of important points here. Another very popular tool in the microblogging areas are these suite-like tools like Hootsuite that basically allow you to, and this is what I use, as you can see up here on this particular slide, it allows me to post comments and information to a number of social networking applications. Since I obviously can't be on all of them, or it's very difficult for any one person, again, regardless of your ability to participate in all of them in an individual way, the suite of tools now support the ability to post information across many social network applications. And therefore, the benefit is obvious and it's intrinsic. It's pervasive. It allows you to communicate globally. It's relational. And again, it enhances awareness building. Next slide. The last form of social networking, and probably one that you're less aware of, is storytelling. Actually, I say that you're probably more aware of storytelling than you know. But what I love about storytelling is exactly what the slide title says. It's a voice that motivates action. It's short stories that are meaningful and effective and impactful. They're specific to an audience. They're inherently interesting because they are stories, and people love to listen to stories. It creates predicaments. It creates tension. It allows you to view unexpected events. It gets listeners involved, and that's really what we're trying to do. Get people, get developers, get designers, get governments, get organizations, get industry, get educational institutions. Get people to listen, and it allows you to convey your needs as an individual or as a collection of individuals. So this is my soapbox. I'm heavily into storytelling. It's a notion of usability. I'll be teaching a workshop on it at the CSUN conference this March. Next slide. So this is our final slide here, again emphasizing the power of social networking, that it does, it increases our voice, It helps us to establish relationships, both personal and in a broad spectrum of relationships in ways that we never could before. And it helps build awareness around the needs of people with disabilities. Now, I don't want to mislead you. I don't want you to think the social networking, while I believe it has the potential of being the next black swan, that it's a panacea, that it's paradise. There are a lot of challenges in social networking. It's a little bit of everything. The accessibility of many of these applications, including Facebook and Twitter, they are rooted in technologies that themselves have problems with accessibility. They are built in rich media, they have dynamic content, they've got players and viewers, specialized players and viewers that are not usable and not accessible. They have that context of capture that I said before, which is this encrypted visual encryption, graphical encryption language, if you will, that is not inherently accessible. There are AT compatibility issues, there are usability issues. There's a lack of awareness, period, around designers and developers who create these applications and what they need to do to make them accessible and usable by people with disabilities. And perhaps more importantly, is especially germane to this discussion, is that there's this notion of people with disabilities who are outside of the mainstream, people with disabilities who don't have easy access to technology or the internet or the web, where these social networking interfaces and applications are grounded. And of course, there's a lack of training. But as F. Scott Fitzgerald once said, someone I really like to quote, he said, one should be able to see that things are hopeless, yet be determined to make them otherwise. And I really think that's where we're headed. We are determined to enhance and make social networking not only the ubiquitous and pervasive environment that it is for people without disabilities, but something that is ubiquitous and pervasive for people with disabilities. There are a number of resources and activities that are going on in Facebook, in Twitter, and YouTube, and WordPress to enhance the accessibility. And I would just encourage you, if you like, offline, please feel free to send me email, and I will provide you with that resource information. And without further ado, Janet, I'll open it up to you to handle the Q&A.
Thank you, Mike. What an excellent presentation. We will open it up for question and answer, so you can either click on your microphone, just be sure to release it when you are done asking your question, or feel free to type it in the chat area. And you should on your screen see the link for the evaluation, which will also be emailed to you, so please take a minute to also share your feedback with us. So we'll open it up for questions for Mike. You can go ahead and put it in the chat area as well. I did, Mike, while people are typing their questions or trying to use the microphone, I did have one. Well, actually, let's do Bob's question first, and then I'll ask the one that came via email. Bob says, could you say a little more about about storytelling?
Hi, Bob. Thanks very much. Storytelling is a usability methodology that I've been using for about 2 years, and there are certainly many more people in the usability field who are using it a lot longer. But it's a means of interaction, relationship building between an individual with a disability and designers and developers. Now, this is speaking specifically from a technologist and software development standpoint. So what we have found over the years, as you probably are well aware, is that most designers and developers just don't get it. They don't fully understand, or they don't have what I call the accessibility mindset of understanding what the actual user needs of a person with a disability, regardless of what that disability is, what those needs really are. They don't understand how people who are blind use screen readers, or how people with low vision use screen magnifiers, or how people with speech disabilities use drag and dictate, how they interact with a computer interface. by telling your stories or by capturing a story and putting it into the written word, and then creating a persona, which is basically the definition of a personality or a type of person, and allowing developers and designers to see these, it helps them to better appreciate how a user with a disability interacts with software. So that's just a small piece of what storytelling does. Now, there's another very popular way of storytelling, especially from a social networking standpoint, and that is people with disabilities telling their stories, their life stories, their events, the things that happen to them. It gives us a greater appreciation for who they are and what they go through. Okay, next question. Let's see, I see, Gina, I'm reading the questions that are on the screen. I see one from PJ Gardner, and she asks, what needs to be done to encourage accessibility in social networking software? Well, that's a great question. And what I say is tweet it, blog it, build awareness, raise your voice. It's not really any different from what many of us have been doing over the last 25 or 30 years or more. It's just that now we have a venue, and that is this social networking venue by which we can reach a lot more people. Again, to give you a classic example, I have seen individuals who have posted Facebook comments or blogs or Twitter comments that were viewed, for example, by large corporate entities who have an investment in accessibility and a vested reason for making sure that people with disabilities have accessible software, and they have reacted to those needs. I have a number of different stories that I could tell you just about that, but that's how I really think we can get to them. Okay, the next question is from Karen Pagel. And she asks, do you see the influx of mobile technology positively affecting accessibility? Absolutely. Of course, I mean, there will always be the problems of how individuals with mobility disabilities and other certain disabilities that may have a difficulty handling the actual mobile devices. But there are adaptive aids and accessible technologies that are increasing. Even the accessibility of smartphones, for example, very popular. iPhone accessibility has a number of good attributes. The BlackBerry has a number of good attributes. Android has a number of good attributes. They still need refinement. They still need enhancement. But I think the more portable a device is, you can do things like most people don't know that I literally have been Twittering and posting comments for the last 6 weeks from a hospital. My wife has been really sick, and so I've been just taking my laptop or my smartphone, my BlackBerry, and I've been posting comments that way. So it shows how effective it can be. Okay, I see the next question is David Cornelius. Oh, I'm sorry, I missed one. How does Hootsuite work? I'll tell you, Marianne, the best thing I can do is tell you to go to www.hootsuite.com and try it out. The thing is, and I'll be honest with you, if you are an individual who is blind or has low vision, you're better off using something like Accessible Twitter or MicTwit if you happen to be on a Mac or a Mac, because most of these new applications and these suite of applications are not very usable and accessible to people with disabilities. But they are basically a single tool that posts to many different social networks. Now I'll go on to David's question. Many social networking sites are currently viewed by upper management as time wasters in the workplace. What are some strategies that can be used to change these opinions? Well, Dave, I think the obvious has to be stated. Every tool, particularly tools and applications that are computer-centric and computer-oriented, oftentimes have their advantages and they have their disadvantages. As an individual with a disability or or individuals who are professionals working within the disability community, you've got to make a good business case for their use. You need to show the impact that these tools have, how they create business, if business is what's need to be created. If you're in an educational institution, how they create awareness or how they build opportunities for training and education. If you're within a government organization, how you can effectively communicate the standards and the demands of government entities at that level. Most of the problems, I think, that are also intrinsic to these new social networking environments are around security and privacy. And that may be a different argument that you might have to defend. So you need to get up to speed on what can be done at that level. Okay, the next question is from Jessica. She asked, as a web designer, where can I find stories that will help me create accessible websites? Stories that can create accessible websites. And are there any sources to QA test websites for accessibility? There are a number of websites out there that aren't necessarily story-driven, but our website that will teach you how to create accessible websites. A couple of popular ones, if you can go to the WebAIM website, KnowAbility, these are usually .orgs or .edu, just look them up in Google. TPG, the Passiello Group's website, we do a lot of awareness building around that. I think if you just plug accessibility, accessible websites into Google or any search engine that you prefer, you'll find a lot of sites that will help you to work on that. Of course, the big one is the World Wide Web Consortium's W3C, their Web Accessibility Initiative website. So if you go to www.w3c.org/way, WAI, you'll find a host of information about building and developing accessible websites, including the testing tools for it. Jenny, you're going to have to tell me when I stop, because right now I'm just going to keep answering questions as I see them. So just type it into the chat area. How does one test their materials? Again, go up to the W3C site, the TPG site, the WebAIM site, the KnowAbility site, and you'll find a number of different links to ways that you can test websites. Certainly, if you email me, we'll provide you with some direction in that area as well. And as you note, Janet notes that there are resources on the DIPTAC website. Eliza asked the question, Eliza Yanda asked, what is the most accessible video player that you are aware of? I'll tell you, the video players that are out there are pretty much equal. The QuickTime player, the Windows Media Player, are probably the more accessible players for video right now. The Real Player, I haven't seen as much working in that area. There aren't as many specialized players for people with disabilities around this area, but most of them, you may see a Flash player as well. Flash players, they're being worked on as far as the accessibility is concerned, but most of them are pretty much on an even keel where users can have access to the content and to the controls with their assistive and adaptive software and technology. And thank you, Rick. I appreciate it. I hope, I know only an hour doesn't do social networking, the kind of justice that it really needs. And I can tell you that we'll be putting on more workshops, in-person workshops too. And by all means, feel free to contact Janet and DIPTAC or contact us at TPG. We'll be more than happy to give your organization a free webinar as well. Any other questions? Thank you for posting my Twitter page. You're welcome, Hannah.
What a great session that was, and thanks for all your participants for your attention and great questions during this session. The session will be recorded and archived, and I will send out a link as soon as that's available. Thanks, everyone.